The Airmen Who Would Not Die by Michael Crompton, adapted from the book by John G. Fuller, with Jack Davenport, Douglas Hodge, Sylvester Latuzel, Miranda Richardson, and Kevin Whately.
Everything you are about to hear is true. My name is Major Oliver Villas. For so many years, I have been forced to live with this secret. And now that I am the last one alive, it can, at last, be told. Most people, when you ask them, have heard of the R-101, the biggest airship ever built. They know there was some kind of accident, a disaster, followed by a public inquiry. The official verdict said that no one could ever really know what had happened, because all the leading players, the designer, the minister for air, the captain, the navigator, they all perished on that dreadful October morning in 1930. Dead men tell no tales. Well, these men did. They told me everything, and I believe the time has come to reveal what really happened. Please understand, I neither asked for nor sought any of what occurred. We must start at the beginning, 1928. You must remember, no one had yet flown the Atlantic from east to west against the relentless headwinds. They had certainly tried. In the previous year alone, 7 men and 1 woman had lost their lives attempting the impossible. Elsie Mackay, wealthy heiress and amateur pilot, wanted to be the first. She knew she could not do it alone, so she asked the best, most experienced aviator of the day, Captain Raymond Hinchliffe, DFC, to be her pilot.
Hinch, old man!
Scotty!
What brings you up here? How's that lovely wife of yours?
Fine, fine. How's it all going?
Well, the R-101.
No, your handicap.
There's no golf at Cardington, old man. Just these bloody great sheds.
Impressive looking things. Saw them as I got off the North Road.
You wait till you see inside.
Is Johnson about?
He's in his office, I should think. What's going on?
Need some advice.
You're not going for the Atlantic. Who's paying?
Strictly confidential.
Whatever for?
If her father finds out, he'll lock her up.
I was right. A woman. What are you flying?
Stinson Detroiter.
She's rich, then. I bet you any money she's an heiress.
I can't tell you, Scotty.
Does Emily know?
Of course she knows.
Major Scott?
Do you know Colmore?
I know of him. Aero Club, not well.
Glad I've caught up with you.
Wing Commander Colmore, Captain Hinchliffe.
How do you do?
Welcome to Cardington.
Thank you.
What's happened?
Air Minister, coming up Friday.
Oh, what the hell for?
He and Major Villas are bringing up some Treasury people.
Not more bloody bowler hats.
He wants an update on the new engines.
Well, I'll show Hinch over the main shed and then I'll...
I'll be in my office.
Trouble?
No, no, Lord Thompson's all right for a government minister. The whole thing is his baby. Now the press are beginning to stir the pot.
Colmore looks worried.
Oh, he's brilliant at shuffling papers, pressing flesh, but he's not a flying man.
Bloody hell!
There's the new tornado engine. Affected by heat. No, it's just set for India. They're originally built as train engines.
How many?
5 in all. Now they're working on a reverse gear.
Hinch!
Ah! Captain Owen, I presume.
No, they haven't got you working up here, have they?
Oh, you must be joking. 2 wings and a single engine's more than enough for me.
He's flying for the Atlantic.
Who's paying?
Some beautiful heiress.
When are you going?
March.
March?
A couple of Germans are attempting it in April.
Who's your co-pilot?
Officially, it's going to be Gordon Sinclair.
Sinclair? He's a good man.
After you, he's the best.
And what about me?
And unofficially?
His benefactress wants the glory.
You'll have a battle with the winds.
I know. I'm hoping Johnny can find me a route through.
Shut the door, will you?
That's better.
So, what do you fly?
Stints in Detroiter.
You'll need every inch of space for fuel.
I'll strip right completely.
No room for a wireless.
I know.
I'll find you some maps.
Ah, thanks, Johnny. I knew you'd help.
What do you make of our little experiment?
Well, I've never seen anything quite like it.
Taller than Nelson's column? Bigger than 5 football pitchers?
How the hell is she going to float, let alone fly?
Gas bags are being sewn together as we speak.
You don't just fill it up like a balloon, then?
Oh, if only it were that simple. No, there are 16 gas bags, each with a capacity of no less than 500,000 cubic feet.
Good God.
Airship will have at least 170 tons of useful lift. That's the theory, at least.
You're not so sure?
There might be a bit of a problem when we get airborne. Skins, you see, are very thin. Tried everything else, but that's what I love about this job. New problems, new solutions.
Everyone seems very optimistic.
Journey to work alone is breathtaking. These two sheds are the biggest buildings in Europe, and inside them is the most... Just think, within 2 years, less, we'll be running regular airship services to and from America, India, round the world and back again. Imagine India in just 5 days. Mm. 5 days in the lap of luxury, beating the ocean liners by weeks.
I hear the Air Minister's coming up on Friday.
Really? Good.
Well, Wing Commander Colmore doesn't seem too pleased.
More Lord Thompson sees problems as well as triumphs, the better.
Scotty seems to like him.
Thompson's all right. Giving himself the title Lord Carlington seems to make him think he's some sort of expert. He's not. He's a politician, an ambitious one at that. Between you and me, Hinch, I'm not sure if his ego will allow this little experiment to fail.
What do you mean?
Well, what I say... Sorry, Hinch. I'm rattling on. We've all been up here at Carlington a hell of a long time, and when someone from the outside world pops in, we get a little excited. Here we go. Let's plot your course. When exactly are you flying?
Any time before April.
You're joking.
No choice, old man.
I hope you're being well paid for this.
10,000 if we make it, 10,000 if we don't. And I get to keep the prize money.
If you make it.
We will.
I'm sure you will. Millie must be very excited.
Well, I'm a little apprehensive, of course.
But knows it's something you have to do.
If the conditions are not right, I won't chance it. I've got Gordon Sinclair to help with the preparations.
Excellent. Where are you flying from?
Cranwell. But that sounds a lot better.
It was a good idea to change them.
Let's hope they keep firing.
If this weather gets any worse, they won't need to.
Gordon?
What is it?
You don't think we're going to make it, do you?
Of course I do. It's just with Elsie Mackay as your co-pilot.
I have no choice, Gordon. You know that.
The plane is nearly twice as heavy as it should be.
I know.
When the wind turns against you, Miss Mackay, for all her flying experience, simply won't have the strength.
Where the hell is she?
Perhaps her father finally caught up with her.
I said 8 o'clock. Thank you, Gordon, for all you've done, all you've said. I wish you were coming with me.
Don't get me wrong. I know you can make it. The best bloody flyer this country has got.
Just one more favour.
Name it.
Emily and little Joan, I've always... No matter where I've been, I've managed to get a message to safe and well sort of thing. Without a wireless, it's
not going to... Don't worry. Ceci and I are driving down tonight. Stay for the duration. In a couple of days, we'll be cracking open the champagne.
Good God.
What?
She's brought someone with her.
Good morning.
It's like a photographer.
I thought you might be going without me.
May I introduce Gordon Sinclair? Gordon, this is Miss Elsie Mackay.
How do you do, Mr. Sinclair?
Sorry, my hands are a bit oily. We were changing the plugs.
What's a photographer doing here? I thought you wanted absolute secrecy.
He's a friend. We'll need something for the history books.
I said 8 o'clock.
The priest wouldn't get out of bed.
You went to a priest?
Having organized your insurance policy, Captain Hinchliffe, I thought I'd arrange one for myself.
I see you've organized some supplies, Miss Mackay.
As agreed with Captain Hinchliffe last night, sandwiches for 3 days, Mr. Sinclair. Beef, ham, chicken, pâté de foie gras, thermos flasks of tea, coffee, and... Do you like turtle soup?
Huh?
It's all they had.
Gordon, go and check the latest weather reports, would you?
There.
Let me see.
Please, Gordon.
Right.
Snow and sleet showers over the east coast of Ireland. A depression 800 miles west of the Scillies. Fog and rain for the first 500 miles. doesn't sound good.
It's going to be a battle all the way.
We'll try for tomorrow, then.
They won't let us have the runway.
They wouldn't when I asked them yesterday, but I'm sure I could persuade them.
It's not going to get any better.
You don't know that.
But if I take Sinclair as co-pilot...
No, absolutely not.
I said, when we first met, the one condition I stipulated, I can cancel the flight at any time.
I won't let you go without me.
Then we can't go.
My father is on his way down here, Captain Hinchliffe, so in all probability, this is my last chance. Here, look. This morning's Times. The Germans are making their attempts next week, so in all probability... It's your last chance, too.
You've seen the weather reports.
Give up now and you get nothing. Agree to take me, and whatever happens, your wife and family will be very well looked after.
I need a strong co-pilot.
I know what you and your friends must think of me. Some silly heiress with too much money and too few brain cells. If I could have done, I would have been out here with you, checking the maps, changing the plugs, coating the fuselage with paraffin. I can do all that and more. But my father would have found me out. And it's not just my health is concerned with, you understand. The owner of the P&O shipping empire is worried that his daughter will encourage the air industry, the airships, the... If I were his son, I wouldn't need you at all, Captain Hinchliffe. The wind is making my eyes water. I have never wanted anything so much in all my life, and neither, I believe, have you. Before us is an opportunity to make history. Take that opportunity, Captain Hinchliffe. I dare you.
Miss Mackay, Captain Hinchliffe.
What is it?
Smile, both of you, if you please.
Good girl. You were hungry.
Oh, sorry, Emily.
No, come in, Gordon.
How's she doing?
At least someone's eating their food. Where's Joan?
With Ceci in the garden. On the swing, pretending to be her father.
Good girl.
I hate this bit.
The waiting.
Can I get you anything?
It's as though the whole world slows down. I never used to worry. I always knew he would come home.
He wouldn't have gone if he thought there was a risk of not making it.
You know that's not true. Every moment there is risk, Gordon. That's how Hinch is. Good girl. There's not a pilot who works more carefully, but he also knows that his time is running out.
No, that's not true.
It's not in his nature to sit behind a desk. And because of his eye injury, he knows that a commercial airline won't ever employ him again.
I'll get it.
I hope that's news of your daddy.
Yes? Yes. A Stinson has been sighted over Ireland.
What time?
What time would that be? 1:30 p.m. Mizzenhead Lighthouse.
That's 400 miles in 5 hours.
It's pretty good going. They're still heavy with fuel.
They're out over the Atlantic, Far away.
Thank you very much. A French steamer says it saw a plane flying low on a direct course for Newfoundland.
Good. When we went through Johnson's map together, it seemed the best course.
Perhaps a liner will catch sight of them.
They're flying too far north, I think, away from the shipping lanes.
Well, we'll hear more from them soon.
Of that I have no doubt.
Here you go, Johnny. Latest Met report.
Thanks.
They left with a following wind.
Look at this lot coming in from the west. If he's kept to the course we'd plotted, he'd be flying right into it. Sleet, wind, rain.
Well, that storm could push him several hundred miles off course.
No, he'd be keeping as low as possible. Bloody hell. What time is it?
Just coming up to midnight.
He's been up there 16 hours. When Scotty and I went out over the Atlantic in R-33, I remember thinking I'd never do this in a plane. All that water just goes on and on.
Well, he's got a co-pilot.
He'd have come out of fog and hit the storm. There's no way he would have let her take over. It's pitch black. He's been flying 16 hours.
Any news?
Not too good, Scotty, I'm afraid.
Look, you made the evening news on the front page.
Miss Elsie Mackay attempts to fly Atlantic.
No wonder Hinch kept it a secret. Look at her. Bloody gorgeous.
We were looking at the latest Met report.
Yes, so I see.
Well, we've all been out there. Best way through that lot is to attack it head on. Let it know who's boss.
If he keeps heading north, there's a trough. Look, just ahead of him.
If he can hold on that long.
He's the best there is. Let's crack open the champagne.
It's a bit early, Scotty, I think.
What? Come on, you two. It's Hinch out there.
Well, if anyone can do it...
That's the spirit.
Hey!
Please sit down, Mrs. Hinchliffe.
Thank you, Mr. Edridge.
On behalf of my partners here at Drummond's, may I say how saddened we were by the news of your husband?
Yes, thank you. The whole country seems to think that he is dead, but I know it has been some weeks now, but even coming here feels like a betrayal, like I have given up hope.
We have made some inquiries regarding the insurance Miss Mackay took out on behalf of your husband.
I would not have come, but the mortgage needs to be paid, bills... My daughter Joan is not well, the doctor. I would gladly work, but there are no jobs.
Your husband, Mrs. Hinchliffe, quite sensibly took all precautions. He made sure that if the worst happened, you and your daughters would be well cared for. But I have some rather bad news. It would seem that Miss Mackay did indeed take out an insurance policy for your husband. The premium was extremely high.
What can be the problem?
She wrote a check to pay the premium, but there were insufficient funds in her account.
Miss Elsie Mackay is one of the wealthiest women in the country. Heiress to the entire P&O empire. How can she not have sufficient funds?
The money owed your husband, his wages and expenses, they have all been honoured.
She insured his life for £10,000.
We will, of course, make further inquiries.
What about her estate?
It's all in the hands of her father, Lord Inchcape.
What can I do?
As you are aware from the newspapers, he strongly disapproved of his daughter's plans.
We're finished. Finished. Should I write to him? No, it would be like begging. My husband would not have gone, would not have taken such a risk. He would never have left our two daughters unprovided for. What am I going to do?
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman.
He's hiding.
That's right. The giant's big boots thumped on the kitchen floor.
Thump, thump, thump.
Are you not asleep yet?
I'm hiding.
We were just finishing.
Come on, darling.
Mummy.
Bed.
When's Daddy coming home?
He's gone on a long journey.
I know, but when is he coming home?
When the journey is finished, my darling. Now it's time to sleep.
Mummy.
Good night, little Joan. Thank Gordon for reading you such a long story.
Fee, fi, fo, fum.
Good night. Let me get you a drink, Gordon.
Thanks. How was Drummond's?
Oh, fine. Doing their English best.
We wondered if you and the children want to come and stay with us for a while.
Thank you.
It will be no bother. We'd love you all to come. After all, there's plenty of room for everyone.
I think I'd rather stay here, Gordon, just for the time being. You understand.
Of course, of course.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, yes, I have something to show you. I received a letter.
Not another bill.
No. Where did I put it? Oh, here we are. It arrived just a few days ago. Please go ahead. Read it.
Dear Mrs. Hinchliffe, will you excuse a perfect stranger writing to you? I am supposing you are the wife of Mr. Hinchliffe, the lost airman. I get writing. And I had a communication from him the other day that they came down into the sea off the Leeward Islands at night. His great anxiety is to communicate with you. Of course, you may not believe in the possibility of communication, but he has been so urgent three times that I must write direct to you and risk it. Yours sincerely, Beatrice Earle.
What do you think?
I don't know.
What does she mean? I get writing.
Something to do with a Ouija board, I think.
Well, you don't believe in all that stuff, do you?
No, of course not.
She must be some sort of crank. Look at it. The Leeward Islands. There's no such place.
I was about to throw it out when this other letter came.
If you ask me, people like Mrs.
This one's from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
And what does he want?
He believes Mrs. Earle has been receiving a true message. The fact that she can name our solicitors seems to have convinced him. They've even gone to a second medium for corroboration, who thinks I might be foreign and have two young children.
Well, that doesn't prove anything.
What do you think I should do? The first letter made me angry. The second makes me... I don't know. Why are they doing this to us?
I was so pleased to get your letter, Mrs. Hinchliffe. This is the first time that anything like this has happened to me. I wasn't sure what to do. I hope you wouldn't mind my writing. I know how upsetting it can be. I lost my son in the Great War. In fact, it was him I was trying to contact when your husband... Have you had any news?
No. I must admit I'm not sure why I've come here, Mrs. Earle.
No, I quite understand.
You and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle seem so certain...
Would you like some tea?
No, thank you.
My son went missing, you understand. For a long time, I wouldn't believe he was actually dead. I half expected him to come in through the door singing away. He had a lovely voice. Came as something of a shock when he made contact. It's not easy.
Not knowing is the worst thing, Mrs. Earle. Having nothing. Waiting.
Yes.
Tell me what happened.
I wrote it all down.
Would you read it to me, please?
Not altered anything. Can you help a man who was drowning? That was the first thing that came through. The glass was moving very fast, you understand. I was drowned with Elsie Mackay. I asked how it happened. Fog, storm, wind went down from great height. As the glass moves to the letters, I write them down. You don't know what you've got until you put them all together. I asked him where he came down. Leeward Islands. Are you sure you want to hear all this, Mrs. Hinchley?
Yes, I'm quite sure. Please, what else does it say?
Tell my wife I want to speak with her. I'm in great distress. I'm sorry. It's why I wrote to you. He kept repeating this. This can't be easy. I know. Why don't we stop and have some tea?
Sir Arthur said that the name of our solicitors was mentioned.
Yes, that's right. Here, look. Drummonds of Croydon. After I wrote it down, I looked it up in the telephone directory. As I've said, I wasn't sure what to do.
Take the risk. My life was all risks. I must speak to her. I wish I had not been over-persuaded to come.
I wondered if he was under some sort of pressure to fly.
Why are you doing this?
We should stop for now.
What do you want, Mrs. Earle?
Nothing. I'm not normally one to take risks, but...
I have no money. I can't pay you.
I don't want money, Mrs. Hinchliffe.
I'm sorry.
I understand. I must admit I'm not at all sure what it means.
Sir Arthur mentioned a medium.
Eileen Garrett.
She said that I might be foreign, that I might have two children.
She's a trance medium. The best there is.
This information was in the papers.
This was not meant to be proof for you. It's for us. So that we might contact you.
But why?
He doesn't want to speak with us, Mrs. Hinchliffe. He wants to speak with you.
There is no such place as the Leeward Islands.
I know. Sir Arthur wondered if it was a reference to islands on the leeward side of the winds.
Then why didn't he say that?
Well, you have to understand. It's not easy to make contact, to come through. It's not like picking up the telephone and listening to a voice. I would suggest we try now, but the Ouija board is very clumsy, Mrs. Hinchliffe. I think you should go to Eileen Garrett. I'll come with you if you like. I could take down what's said.
But that won't be necessary. I used to be a secretary and may have to be one again if I'm to keep a roof over our heads. I'm sorry, Mrs. Earle. I don't think I can. I don't think I want to.
I quite understand.
You said you lost your son.
Yes. He was just a boy.
If I go to Mrs. Garrett, what would happen exactly?
Well, it's all very informal. When I first went, I must admit, I was a bit disappointed. There's none of that theatrical mumbo-jumbo you hear about. It's all pretty straightforward.
What will she do?
You're going. She won't know who you are. You won't give your name. She'll ask you to sit down. Then she'll close her eyes and begin. After a few moments, a few deep breaths, she'll open her eyes and simply talk to you. Like all trance mediums, she has what is called a guide or control. The voice of the control will come through after she has put herself in a trance state. At that point, the control will temporarily take over. Mrs. Garrett is only a channel. She's no idea of what's being said. The trance voice will slip back and forth from her guide to your husband. If, of course, it is your husband trying to make contact.
You're very welcome. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
I'm sure my guide will tell you all you need to know. And there is nothing to be frightened of. Yes, we have a newcomer in our presence. Someone dear to you. He says he is your husband. He keeps pointing to a ring on his finger. He refers to you as Emily and Millie, as he calls you. Yes, now he shows me portraits. He mentions the name Joan, little Joan. He knows you have told Joan that he has gone on a journey and that she asked when he was coming back. He does thank you for keeping it from her. Not now, later. Give a kiss to little Joan. How is the new baby?
Please.
He was 33. He keeps rubbing one eye and is laughing. What has happened to one eye?
He lost it
in the war, yes. He was very vivacious and full of life, full of speed, cars or planes. Yes, he passed after having flown in an airplane. He went out suddenly. He passed on due to strong congestion to the heart and lungs, but he was in the state of consciousness. He says it was no one's fault.
I let him go.
Oh, not so. He started in the morning. He was very excited. At 2 o'clock was the last sight of land, then 8 hours of steady flying. He decided to sacrifice something. Don't know what he means. Left strut brakes. His companion was terrified, out of all limits. At 3 a.m., abandoned hope. He needs to speak with you himself.
Please, Mrs. Garrett, I'm sorry. Millie. I have to go.
Millie. I went against all observations. Everyone said the weather was bad. We went right into the face of the storm. Sleet, wind, rain. You knew I wanted to do it. I was coming to the end of my flying. I could not have flown much longer. I could have gone on 2 or 3 years. My eyesight was my life. I was drowned 20 minutes after leaving the wreck. I knew there was a small island group near. It seemed easier to go south to reach land. But you know it was my intention to go north. I had prepared for weeks. Oh, God. Oh, God, Millie, it was awful. That's enough. He had forgotten everything but his wife and children. His last superhuman effort was to swim to land. I cannot say his name. I see signatures all around. In a mirror. I will spell. E-F-F-I-L-H-C-N-I-H.
H-I-N-C-H. He's dead. He really is dead.
Emily.
This is all nonsense, Gordon. What are we doing?
I thought...
When she was speaking, I thought I could feel him in the room.
You miss him. You wanted him to be...
No, this was different. Of course you're right. He wasn't there. I feel so stupid.
What did you want when you went to Mrs. Garrett?
I don't know. Hope? These words coming through. I want to believe them, but I want to challenge, disprove
them. Well, we'll do just that, then. Go through everything she said and place it against the known facts. Most of it so far is common knowledge. It's clever guesswork.
Yes, I suppose it is.
What did she say next?
She then detailed his flight. He went south towards a group of islands.
Well, we know for a fact he went north.
According to Mrs. Garrett, he was 600 miles off course. Here, look. At midnight, he deliberately altered course.
I know what we can do.
What's that?
We can put this woman to the test right now.
All we know is that they may have been sighted by a French steamer.
We'll plot the course she says he took on a map. Where'd you keep them?
In the bureau.
Right. Here we go. And we know He was heading north, as planned.
But according to Mrs. Scarrett, was several hundred miles off course.
Yeah, well, that could mean anything. But let's say, given the known wind direction, he was more southerly than planned. That puts him about here. So, then, at
midnight,
he
flies steadily south until 3.
He would have had the winds behind him. Putting his speed up to about 120 miles an hour also would have been a good deal lighter after 3 hours. Let's see where that would place him.
In the end, before he started, he changed the plugs.
How do you know that?
I didn't. This is Eileen Garrett.
She said that Hinch changed the plugs.
He was very nervy about the plugs and that he wanted to change the make of the plugs.
We did it that morning.
He was a little shaky over the plugs.
Because they'd not been tested.
Read that.
He has not tried these on a long-distance flight. Well, that's incredible. One was not sparking, and that cost him. There was much backfiring, and this really started the trouble with Elsie. Elsie tried to take control. He would not allow her, although she could. But any change would not have been good. He did not trust her flying. Well, that's what we were saying before they took off. Does she say exactly where they came down?
She had trouble with the name of the island here. This is what she said. The name of the island is Corvo.
All right, let's take a look. 600 miles off course at midnight. He heads further south for 3 hours. Well, that's roughly 350 miles, so that would take...
The name of the island is the Azores.
Yes.
Is there an island called Corvo?
Well, Santa Maria, Flores, Pic...
What?
Here, look.
Carvo.
Well, she could have looked at a map.
She knows so much. Calling me Millie, describing little Joan, the fact that Hinch wore an iPad.
Emily, she could easily have seen a photo.
What about the plugs? Elsie McCarr?
Oh, I don't know. She could have spoken to someone.
Who?
Well, someone who was there. Let's stop now. Let's have a drink.
Gordon, I think you should read this.
He remembers the dining room and the garage on the side of the house. He used to whistle from the garage to you in the bedroom. He used to work in the garden on Sundays, talking to little Joan while she helped him. He often sees you sitting by the wireless. He saw you tidy the papers. Listen, Emily.
In the hall, his cap and coat are still there. He asks about the bookcase, the occasional table, his portraits in flying clothes and the one in army uniform. How does she know this? Has she been spying through the windows, talking to my neighbors, to you?
No, of course not.
You should see her, hear her. It's like she's talking to me. And the speed with which she speaks, it would be so difficult to make it up. And why would she want to? What could she possibly gain? I just don't know what it means.
Tell them there is no death but everlasting life. Life here is but a journey and a change to different conditions. We go from unconscious perfection to conscious perfection.
I don't know about all that. What I want to know is why.
What do you mean?
Well, these words, the words I wrote during the séance, why am I being told these things?
May I take this opportunity to say how good it is to see you once more? Yes. Yes, here is that husband of yours again.
What does he want?
His great responsibility is in connection with monetary things.
I have tried everything I can. I've written letters.
From the father of the girl, there will be some compensation forthcoming.
He has donated Elsie Mackay's entire estate to the government to help pay off the national debt.
The money will come.
Mr. Winston Churchill, the Chancellor, has said that my claim has nothing to do with the government.
I do not think Lord Inchcape will give under his own name, but anonymously.
When exactly?
July 25th. Yes. At the end of the month. Yes. The money will come.
I'm sorry. I find that hard to believe.
The last day of the month.
Yes?
Emily?
Oh, Gordon, it's you.
You won't have heard.
What?
It's in the late editions of the evening news. Winston Churchill made an announcement in the Commons. Shall I read out what he said?
Yes, please.
Lord Inchcape, being desirous that the Elsie Mackay Fund of £500,000 given by him to the nation should not be the object of any complaint, has placed a further sum of £10,000 from his own property to be applied in such manner as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, in his absolute discretion, may think fit. You've got the money. He's paid up. Emily?
Yes. Yes, I heard you.
You and the children are provided for at last. We're so happy for you. Emily, are you there?
Thank you. You were right, Hinch. You were right. The last day of July. I'm sorry I did not believe in you, but now I know you are with me. Thank you, my darling.
He is very happy and overjoyed that the money has come. But do not get interested in this psychic subject and the dabbling. He so wants to communicate with you himself. Millie, it is all right that we can talk, but don't get carried away.
I won't. It's just financially. Everything is at last resolved.
Yes, I know. I feel that something is about to happen that will startle people more than they have ever been startled.
What?
They're getting things rushed.
Who?
How can I tell Johnson?
Johnson?
I know this may sound foolish, but I'm certain if things go on, there will be a buckling because some of the wires holding the fabric aren't strong enough.
Are you talking about the R101?
I can't help thinking there may be trouble with it. I want them to have another look at the wires to see that all is in order. Johnson must know. Ask them to be more careful.
You mean Squadron Leader Johnson?
There's a new type of engine they're trying out. It's not going to be a success. Things aren't right at headquarters. Bear it in mind. A new type of engine. Tell them to be careful. It's not stabilized as it should be. It must be possible for you to tell Johnson in confidence and ask him to be careful.
Oh. Excuse me, Mrs. Hinchcliffe, we've all been working harder than we ought. This blasted cough. I had the great pleasure of meeting your husband last year when he came up to see Squadron Leader Johnson. They're all out on a test flight right now.
How has it been going?
Oh, fine, fine. This'll be my dear wife telephoning.
Would you like me to...
No. She thinks I should be at home, tucked up in bed.
Better than sleeping here with that cold.
Well, if I went to bed now, I'm not sure I'd ever get up again. Oh, she's gone. So, what can we do for you, Mrs. Hinchcliffe?
It's only... I have a few questions for Squadron Leader Johnson, that's all.
Well, maybe I could help.
Oh, no, please, Wing Commander Colmore. They can easily wait.
Well, of course, if it's something personal.
No, like the tens or hundreds of thousands of people who have been drawn to Cardington from all over the country. I'm simply curious, intrigued by your work. Nothing else.
Well, try me.
I merely wanted to ask... I was interested to hear from friends about the solution you've devised for containing the hydrogen bags.
Yes, indeed.
Are they held together by wires? Is that right?
Yes, that's right. The design team have ingeniously created a whole web of them.
What, I wonder, stops the gas bags from moving about, rubbing against the wires?
Ah, yes. You're obviously very well informed, Mrs. Hinchcliffe. Your years at KLM head office, no doubt.
But I've always taken an interest, and of course being married to a pilot.
Yes, yes, of course. At present, the wires are wrapped in cloth wherever the chafing is likely to happen.
I see. And does that help?
No, not yet. We have been having some problems, but the trials have gone extremely well.
I'm glad. And the engines, are they responding to the trials too?
When they don't break down. Feeder pipe breaks in one, we fix it. Another starts misfiring. We'll get there.
I know they were something new. None of the other airships have tried diesel.
They were thought too heavy, but we've solved that by simply increasing the lift.
I just wondered what sort of engine could outrun an ocean liner by several weeks.
I think we were testing the tornadoes when your husband came up to see us. All the men were following his brave attempt, you know.
Are they easily stabilized?
Stabilized?
The engines.
Yes, come in.
Excuse me, sir. R101 inside, sir.
Excellent. Thank you very much. There, early.
Has something happened?
No. Probably finished what they had to do and decided to come home.
To see their wives.
I tell you what, Mrs. Hinchcliffe, why don't you watch her coming in? Have you seen her in the air?
No.
I think you'll be impressed. There's a surprise for you.
What's that?
The Air Minister's on board.
Air
wonderful, isn't she? Takes your breath away.
She seems to be having trouble tying up at the mast.
Well, no wonder. Steering something over 300 yards long and 200 feet high has its problems. Oh, look out!
What was that?
Ballast. When she first left the tower, she drenched the entire crowd.
Some of the outer cover has been torn.
Yes, it happens.
Doesn't that affect how the ship flies?
Well, it can do. Depends where and how big, of course. I'm sure it won't concern the Air Minister.
She's quite beautiful.
I told you.
Like a giant fish.
The Director of Civil Aviation, Sir Sefton Branker, calls her the Big Silver Trout. But actually, she's bigger than the Mauritania. Ah, they've done it. Hooked on at last. They'll come down the tower. Yes, gentlemen.
Lord Thompson, did you enjoy your first flight on the R-101?
I have enjoyed the flight immensely. Have rarely had a more pleasant experience.
How does it feel, sir, up there?
There's a sense of complete detachment and security. Certainly, I have never been so comfortable on any ocean vessel. The motion is comparable to that of a river steamer, only the airship is less noisy.
What's she like on the inside, sir?
There's plenty of room to walk about, admire the view. As we were coming in, we watched a pack of foxhounds.
I told you, Scotty. Leave it to me.
It was the window, and then you know it.
And the reverse engine was playing up again.
No, you're right. I went in too bloody fast.
How did it go, lad?
Fine.
Yes, not bad.
I'll see you at the debrief. Mm-hmm. They've been up for some time. Nearly 17 hours. It can get very tiring.
I see.
Emily!
Hello, Johnny!
Come to see the greatest show on earth.
How was it?
Going very well. Apart from one of the engines packing up over Plymouth. Even then, we covered well over 500 miles.
Any speed runs?
On just the four good engines, we're top 50.
Excellent. Well done.
Thompson should be very pleased. Scotty made the landing interesting, I thought.
Yes, we saw. Mrs. Hinchliffe wants to speak to you.
Please, I don't want to take up your time.
No. When's the debrief?
I'll check with Major Scott.
I think perhaps your wife is right.
Yes, she looks after me.
Thank you very much, Wing Commander.
Oh, my pleasure. Next time, we'll take you up in her.
That would be wonderful.
Shall we go to my office? It'll be a good deal warmer.
As I'm in charge, no pressure will be brought to bear on the technical staff or on anyone else to undertake any long-distance flights until they are ready and all completely in order. The whole policy of the airship program is safety first and safety second as well.
I'm not sure how best to say all this, having now seen the R-101 for myself.
What is it? Something to do with Hinch?
Perhaps it would be better if you read this.
By all means. They will start without thinking of disaster, but the R-101 will not stand the strain. It will come down on one side first. If the flight is put off, it will be all right. When did you write this?
No, this is my writing.
I don't understand.
After he died, I was contacted by a medium. I went to see her, and I know how this must sound, but I feel I have to tell you. Hinch spoke through her. He said things that only he and I could ever know about. He told me when I would be getting the insurance money, and I thought at first that this was why he was coming through. There was some finished business, and he wanted to comfort me. And then, these messages about the R-101, about you. As you can see, he repeats your name.
Johnson was a very good friend of mine.
I don't want to be accused of shouting fire in a crowded theater.
No. I'm not sure what to say.
You're trying new engines?
Yes.
Are they stable?
Emily.
And there are some wires, cables, that go next to the gas bags?
We're in the middle of a series of test flights. Of course, there are problems. This ship is totally new. But you have to understand. We have, here in Cardington, the best team of men I've ever had the honour of working with.
Major Scott and Flight Lieutenant Owen didn't seem to be working as a team.
We want to get this right, Emily. And we will. In just a few years, we've developed the most advanced airship ever built. An airship that in a few months' time will fly to India. Of course there are disagreements, different ideas on how best to do things. But after every test flight, we get closer and closer.
Yes.
Excuse me, squadron leader. Major Scott wants to debrief in 10 minutes, sir.
On the way.
You'll have to excuse me, Emily.
Of course.
Every day, we get people who tell us it's the wrong shape, it's too big, it's too small, it'll never get off the ground. But this has been the way of history. Anything new, breaking from tradition. I and all these men believe passionately in what we're doing. We check and double-check all and everything. If something's not working, we have the money, the support, staff, resources to put it right. And it will be right, Emily.
Will you at least read the things he's concerned about?
I'll tell you what. After the debrief, I'll take you on board. Show you around. Judge for yourself.
All right. Thank you.
I shouldn't be long. I'll organise some tea. Oh, I'd appreciate if you didn't mention any of this about Hinge. Airmen are notoriously superstitious.
Of course not. He's told me only to speak to you.
I admire you, Emily. I don't know many people who would risk coming here with such a story. I know I can dispel any doubts you or Hinch or anyone may have. You can trust me, Emily. If I or any one of these men didn't for one moment believe in the R101, we wouldn't be here.
Gordon, it's Emily.
Emily, how did it go at Cardington?
I felt such a fool.
It can't have been easy, but what you did was absolutely right.
The R101 is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And the men working on her, they wouldn't let her fly if she wasn't ready.
Did you talk to Johnson?
Yes, he was very kind. He showed me on board. You should see it, Gordon. It's quite wonderful. So luxurious. The dining room, the sleeping quarters, a smoking room, fully equipped kitchen.
What did Johnson say about Hinch? All that was said through Eileen Garrett.
Perhaps he got it wrong. All these warnings, it might be that when Hinch went to Cardington, they were less organized, less sure of themselves. But now, seeing her up in the sky, I think he would be as impressed as I was.
What are you going to do?
I have one more session with Mrs. Garrett at the beginning of next month, and then perhaps, I don't know, we all need a holiday.
From what I know, Millie, the whole idea of dirigibles is spending money in vain. They're not practical.
Johnson showed me how well the test flights have gone.
Let's go back.
I can't do that.
I know you doubt me, but I know I am right.
What can I say?
Millie, you must try to stop them from flying.
How?
You must try.
Biscuit tins. Biscuit tins.
Scotty! What the hell are you doing?
We don't need all these biscuit tins.
You'd better come up.
We can't afford any surplus weight.
It's the starboard gas bags.
Well, I'm waiting on the latest weather report.
If you don't come up, they'll be irrelevant.
You're going to get some sleep there when you've been up all night.
Look, the gas indicator. God, it's been like that for hours. Up and down, up and down.
Must be a leakage. Again.
It's the bloody valves.
Again? Why this time?
The wind's picked up and we've started to pitch.
There's hardly a breeze.
Anything over 4-5 degrees and the bloody great things open up. Listen to them.
The internal pressure must be causing them to open up even more.
Where's Colmore?
With Noble and Roberts.
Well, they're not coming, are they?
No, they're up from Whitehall, snooping about as usual, waiting for Thompson to arrive.
Scotty!
Up here!
What are we going to do?
What can we do? We leave in 10 hours. We can't regas. We run out of time.
Let us met charts. Just come in.
Now, let's have a look.
Owen, old man, if you're not going to go to sleep, at least have some breakfast.
Bloody hell, this is all we need.
It's going to be a rough ride, gentlemen.
We're losing gas.
How much?
It's not just the valves, mind. Look at the skins.
This gold beater stuff is too porous.
We know that. We've always known that. So whatever happens, we must leave on time.
Let's have a look at that chart. Christ. Rain. If the outer skin soaks up too much of it and we keep losing gas at the same rate...
Then we might not be leaving Cardington at all. Scotty.
That's not an option. We can't pull out, not now. It's too late.
I'm not suggesting we pull out.
Well, what are you suggesting?
Scotty, we'll never get to India, not in this condition.
If we'd had a few more trials like we all suggested.
No. I'll talk to Colmore, so when Lord Thompson arrives...
No, let's go to Thompson together, just the three of us.
No.
Why should Colmore shoulder the decision? If we show Thompson the charts, he'll listen to us.
Thompson won't postpone. We all know that.
Oh, I don't believe this. After 7 years' work...
Johnny...
If Thompson won't listen, we've had it.
We can't ask him to postpone.
Erwin...
But he might agree to setting off and then tying up at Le Bourget.
We can't do that.
From what I can see, we've got little choice.
Oh, damn it! Gentlemen, after 7 years, after spending £2.5 million of taxpayers' money, we're finally ready to go. The nation's ready to send us off. We've assembled the best crew in the world. The police are predicting over 30 miles of traffic jams for later today. Lord Thompson's on his way, anticipating a nice little trip to India, and all we can offer them is a hop across the bloody channel. Is that what we're saying? Is it?
Major Scott?
Yes, what is it?
Met report just come through, sir.
Thanks.
Sir.
Well, look at that.
We should postpone. The rate at which we're losing gas combined to that weather front coming in from the northwest, we'd be lucky to get above 1,000 feet.
Johnny?
He's right.
Yes, but given this forecast, can you get us as far as Le Bourget?
It's possible.
How?
We'll be clear to hitch in. We won't need any more than 600 feet for that.
And then?
I can plot us a visual course.
Over London?
Yes.
Islington?
That's right. The white tower and the gloss cover of the cattle market should be clearly visible.
Darkness out?
About 2,200.
With cloud layer?
That's approximate.
What then, Johnny?
5 degrees to port. New heading for Greenwich. Cross the Thames at Rotherhithe. Greenwich Observatory should be visible on the top of the hill. And then plot a course 132 degrees true across Kent.
We're in the dark and flying under 1,000 feet. We'll never get over the downs.
If I can pick up the River Darrent with a slighted bank near Eynsford, that'll give me a course along the valley through the downs. At the shore of Moffat Gap.
And if we miss the lights at Eynsford?
It's a risk we'll have to take.
Then clear to the coast?
After Claxton, yes.
Well, the channel at least should be easier.
Yes, but look at this cold front coming in over northern France.
I know. I've seen it.
So, what can we do about it?
We should be all right. As long as we don't hit a storm.
Major Scott, Wing Commander Colmore's looking for you, sir.
Where is he?
On his way up, sir.
Thanks,
sir.
Now listen, we're taking a risk. We know that. But as far as I can see, we have no choice. Agreed? Now, we'll go and talk to Thompson.
Agreed.
We must keep Colmore out of this.
Why, for heaven's sake?
Come on, Erwin. He's been through hell getting this show together.
I don't want to see him hurt.
Surely if we exclude him, it'll be even worse.
Scotty?
Morning, Reggie.
Morning, all.
Morning. Morning.
Did anyone get any sleep last night? You've taken up the carpet in the lounge.
Oh, did you know how much it weighed?
Oh, things that bad, then?
No, not at all.
We need as much disposable lift as we can get.
Well, my wife rather liked that shade of blue. Made us all seem a touch more civilised.
She's on board.
Unpacking my suitcase for me.
How's she bearing up?
Well, doing her best. Brave face and all that. And I'm only going away for 2 weeks. What have you got there, Erwin?
Latest Met report.
Why did I not see it?
It came straight up here, old man.
Doesn't look good. What do you think? Scotty?
Should be fine. Johnny seems happy enough.
Johnny?
As long as we don't run into a storm.
Yes. Erwin?
I agree. Yes.
Come on, fellas, step on it.
I don't think I've ever seen so much traffic, Lord Thompson. Did that woman eventually catch up with you?
What woman?
Mrs. Hinchliffe, the pilot's wife?
Oh, yes, her. She had some warning about not going. I sent her over to Civil Aviation.
To Branca?
He'd been going on at me for days to cancel. I told him, I said, if you want to pull out, old boy, you go ahead. Play more willing to take your place.
But he's still coming.
Of course he is. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
My God, sir, look at the crowds.
History in the making, fellas. History in the making.
Lord Thompson, at last.
Sorry we're late. Couldn't get through the crowds.
A carpet, sir?
Have it down for the dinner in Ismailia. Got to do it in style, old boy. Some crisp of champagne in the back. Come on, Colmore. Used to work on money in cargo. A few extra bags won't hurt.
Of course, sir. We just
better chat to the press. Villas?
Sir?
Now, we all know the schedule is tight, so I want a plane organised in Karachi in case we have to tie up for longer than planned. Whatever happens, I must be back to the Imperial Conference.
Absolutely, sir.
It'd be damn fine, though, Villas, if I could walk off the R101 into the conference, having popped over to India and back in just 10 days.
It would be the crowning glory, sir.
Oh, yes, one more thing. I've organised some flowers for Princess Bivescu. Check when you get back to London.
Of course. I'll see you before you go, sir.
I've waited a lifetime for this. Like a dream.
Sorry, Wing Commander. I did tell them about the weight limit per passenger.
A little extra won't hurt.
It's not going to rain, is it?
We really need to get going.
I saw your wife.
Where?
At the gate.
We said goodbye a few moments ago.
Can't wait to get off, can you? How are you feeling?
Terrified.
Why, man, whatever for?
Well, to tell you the truth, Billis, I hate flying. Well, if we can beat the weather, I'll be fine.
Is that Johnson's young lad?
These cases need to be put on board immediately.
Johnson?
Major Villas!
How are you? Excited, no doubt.
Major Villas, this is my son, Ernest.
How do you do, Ernest? You must be very proud of your old man.
You'll be off now, sir. Look after your mother, like I said. Sorry. It's usually more.
Yes, sir. I understand. All set, then?
Yes, all set.
Press wants some photos.
Come away.
Good luck.
Thanks.
I wish I was coming with you all the way to India.
Right, gentlemen. Watch the birdie.
Read it back. After an excellent supper, our distinguished passengers smoked a final cigar and, having sighted the French coast, have now gone to bed to rest after the excitement of their leave taking.
Oh, my God, this is a steep one. Pulling out.
Keep reading.
All essential services are functioning satisfactorily. The crew have settled down to watchkeeping routine.
That should keep them happy back home.
We should tell Croydon we're fine.
Thanks for valuable assistance. We'll not require you further tonight.
That should do it.
I'll get it sent.
When do you think we should contact Le Bourget?
Oh, we'll have to leave it as late as possible. Otherwise, we'll give the game away.
I might find it when we get there.
Listen, Johnny, it's a miracle you've got us this far.
She just doesn't feel right.
You'll get us there.
Message being sent.
Hunt reckons the outer cover on the nose is completely ripped open. The gas bags at the front are flapping around like loose washing.
Oh, no! Here we go again! Hold on! The ship's behaving. I think Hunt must be right.
What time is it?
Coming up to 2 a.m.
How far's the boat, eh?
I'll get us there.
Good man. You never guess what my wife had to say on our departure. Bloody pregnant, that's all. Oh,
congratulations on that.
I proposed a toast, but the cups are all over the bloody shop. Has number 5 engine been fixed?
We need all the power we can get.
I'll send Hunt down to check.
Who's in that engine car?
Bell, I think. They'll be changing watch. Good luck, everybody.
How's she running?
Better than she was.
Watch it change. You better turn in.
I'll let her run a few more minutes.
Sounded fine.
Over the channel, I thought we were in for an early bath. Johnson was forced to drop navigation flares to fix our height.
There's a big powwow going on in his room.
What about?
No idea. Johnson, Scott and Irwin.
I reckon they'll head for Paris.
Tie up with the apple powder, you reckon?
You'll be the Moulin Rouge for breakfast.
How's it going, man?
Not so bad, thanks, sir.
You better get some rest now, though.
Just going, sir. Still very low, sir.
There's a rift in the outer cover.
Yeah, I knew something wasn't right.
I'm not sure she was designed for what's being thrown at her. I'm going starboard to check.
Engines are slow. Mr. Hunt, sir.
What is it?
Engine to slow, sir.
Just do it, man. I'll go and see.
We're leveling out.
Jesus Christ, this doesn't feel right. Hey, we're slipping again.
We should be firing all cylinders to get out of it.
Not to make it in time.
We're down, Dan.
Down? He said we're down.
Hold on.
She's tried. She's landed. Oh, God. Whole thing's going up.
Let's get out of here.
Not through the ship. Look at it. Ah!
We're on the ground. Look.
Oh, it's getting bloody up. I'm gonna get roasted! Kick it open! What the hell was that?
It's better.
Oh, thank Christ!
Out! Out!
Well done.
Robert.
What about the others?
Too late!
I have lost my brother in this fatal accident. Wives have lost their husbands, mothers their sons, children their fathers, and a whole nation, has lost 46 of its finest, most experienced and courageous airmen. The Right Honourable Lord Thompson of Cardington, Secretary of State for Air, Sir W. Sefton Branker, Director of Civil Aviation, Lieutenant Colonel V.G. Richmond, Designer R-101, Wing Commander R.B.B. Colmore, Director of Airship Development, Major G.H. Scott, Director of Airship Development, Flight Lieutenant H.C. Irwin, Captain of the R-101, Lieutenant Commander N.G. Atherston, First Officer. Squadron Leader E.L. Johnson, Navigator. George W. Hunt, Chief Coxswain. Squadron Leader F.M. Rope.
Mrs. Hinchcliffe?
I'm sorry. I don't know what's come over me.
Major Villiers, Oliver.
Oh, yes, we met briefly.
That's right. You wanted to speak with Lord Thompson.
You must be heartbroken.
Yes, the whole nation is in mourning.
I feel terrible. Just terrible.
Shall we walk?
Yes. Yes, thank you. Are they taking the bodies to Cardington?
Yes, I understand the whole 3-mile route from station to cemetery is to be lined with servicemen, heads bowed.
I tried to warn them.
Warn who?
I went to Cardington twice to see Squadron Leader Johnson, but that's why I had to speak to Lord Thompson.
What did you warn him of?
The crash. My husband contacted me through the medium, Eileen Garrett. He pinpointed exactly what would happen. The engines, the outer cover, the gas valves. I should have told more people, spoken to the press, let the world know. My husband came back to warn them. I tried. I did try.
All this happened many years ago, but I remember it so very clearly. A few days before the memorial service at St. Paul's, I was sitting by myself in the drawing room. Some friends had come to dine. It was a good evening. At about 11 o'clock, they retired. I felt restless. I made myself some tea and sat by the fire. I had been there just a few minutes when, quite simply, I heard a voice. "For God's sake," it said, "I must speak with you. We're all bloody murderers. For God's sake, help me speak to you." I knew at once it was Flight Lieutenant Irwin, and I felt strongly that I had to act upon what he was asking me to do. I promised him that I would try, but was unsure as to how exactly I might keep my word. And then, on the footsteps of St. Paul's, after I had quite by chance spoken to Mrs. Hinchliffe, I knew exactly what I had to do.
Please come in.
Thank you, Mrs. Garrett.
I won't ask you your name, nor who it is you wish to speak to.
Right.
Would you like anything? A drink, perhaps?
No, thank you.
Do sit down.
Thank you very much. I've brought a clipboard to write notes. Is that all right?
Of course.
You don't mind me writing. I would have brought my secretary,
but... You may do as you wish. Would you excuse me while I prepare?
Yes, of course. Go ahead. I was totally unprepared for what happened next. For a full half hour, from 7 to 7:30, many individuals made their presence known to the control spirit, but nobody that I knew or had any interest in. I was disappointed. I said nothing. As I was getting up to leave, a faint voice was heard.
Irwin. Louder, please. Irwin. Don't go, Villers. Please stay. I must speak.
Don't worry, old man. I'm here.
I see a slim fellow resting with his arm across your shoulder and his head resting against you, rather exhausted. We feel like damn murderers. It's awful, old man. Awful. We ought to have said no.
Wait a minute. Who are the we you mention?
Johnny, Scotty, and I.
Try and tell me all that happened on the Saturday and Sunday.
Weather bad for long flight. Engines wrong. Too heavy. Almost scraped the roofs at Ashy. Kept a railway.
Ashy?
I knew this was not a dream, but a nightmare.
Hold on. Start at the beginning of the flight.
Well, during the afternoon before starting, I noticed that the gas indicator was going up and down, which showed there was a leakage or escape which I could not stop or rectify any time around the valves.
Try to explain a bit more. I don't understand.
The gold beater skins are too porous and not strong enough.
Why not?
The constant movement of the gas bags acting like bellows is causing internal pressure of the gas, which causes a leakage of the valves. I then knew we were almost doomed.
Tell me, what did you do?
Later on, the meteorological charts came in, and Scotty and Johnny and I had a consultation. We decided that we might cross the channel and tie up at Le Bourget before the bad weather came.
You decided for Le Bourget before you left?
We three were absolutely scared stiff.
Did Cornwall know?
No. You will understand. We felt it wasn't fair to let him shoulder the fatal decision.
Couldn't Thompson have helped?
It's awful. You see, I told Thompson when he arrived at Cardington that gas had been escaping. But this is negligible, he said. And surely for this small matter you don't contemplate postponement. It's impossible. I'm pledged to be back for the Imperial Conference. We must leave according to the scheduled time. After crossing the channel, we three knew all was lost.
How exactly did the M come? All the evidence seems to show that she dived, straightened, dived again and crashed.
One of the struts in the nose collapsed and caused a tear in the cover.
A strut in the nose collapsed and caused...
Now listen very carefully.
Please slow down,
it
Irwin.
It is the same strut that caused the trouble before, and they know.
You mean it happened before?
The rush of wind caused the first dive, and then we straightened out again, and another gust surging through the hole finished us.
What was the cause of the explosion? Was it the electrical installation that fused?
No, it wasn't that. It was the engine.
How could an engine cause the explosion?
Gas had been escaping and the engine backfired and ignited the escaping gas.
This is dreadful. I don't know. What can I do?
There is one thing you must try to help in. don't let any other airship come out and do long journeys. Over here, we call them the inventor's nightmare. They're all wrong in construction. It's dreadful to hear what they're saying. All bosh, and they know it, and won't speak the truth.
Who won't?
No more now. You must come back soon. Scotty and Colmore say they must each come and give you their own story. It helps them.
You want me to come back?
Please come soon, and thank you for your thoughts.
Yes.
Come soon. Come soon.
Hello?
Emily?
Major Villas?
Sorry it's so late.
How did it go?
I need to see you tonight. Would that be all right?
Yes, of course. I'll meet you at the station.
Taxi, sir?
No, I don't want one. Sorry, I wouldn't be needing one.
Major? Major Venus? Major, you look exhausted. Are you all right?
If what I've heard is true, what Mrs. Garrett has been saying, it's not so much talking to someone you know is dead, a friend. It's not that. It's the implications. Owen says they knew they would never make it. Yet they knew, and yet they still went ahead. I mean, if that's true, what is that? Brave or stupid? And if Lord Thompson knew, if they told him... Well, don't you see... I knew Thompson. When I got back to London, I checked the flowers he had ordered. He knew. You even tried to warn him. We laughed about it, called you a silly woman. Sorry.
Tell me what happened.
She came out with such incredible technical details, a lot of which I don't understand. She talked about the engines, the gas indicators, gold beta skins.
What are they?
They're what the gas bags were made of.
Hint talked about those.
All of it may well be accurate, but how to prove it? She mentioned a place in France they flew over called Achy. I've looked at a map, but for the life of me, I can't find it.
When will you be going back?
To tell you the truth, Emily, I don't know that I'm strong enough. I'm really not sure I can go on with all this.
Here is Major Scott. He wishes to speak with you.
Scotty, when did you begin to be suspicious?
After her first flight.
Owen mentioned the nose.
Yes. Girder trouble.
Right.
And engine.
No, go slowly. I must get this right. The long struts were numbered A to G.
Not quite. The top one is naught, and then A, B, C.
Yes. Wait a minute.
It was starboard of 5C. On our second flight, after we had finished, we found the girder had been strained, not cracked, and this caused trouble to the cover. This is where she went last time.
Then why did you go, Scotty?
We had to uphold the honor of our country. What would Germany, USA and others have said if we'd ratted? We had to go and take the 1,000-to-1 chance of making a landing in France. We started off with that idea, but we knew we had very little hope.
But since you had decided to try for Le Bourget, why did you not send out a landing party?
We couldn't do so till after crossing the Channel. If the message went too early, we should have blown the gaff and given the game away.
Yes, I do realize. Who told you the news? Where were you?
We, Johnny, Irwin and I, were together.
In the control room?
No, Johnny's cubbyhole. The rigger called us. We saw the instrument board immediately. We all gasped and were horrified.
Did she nosedive then?
No, not quite. We decided to make a turn and go with the wind as far as it was possible and make for Le Bourget and try at all costs some kind of landing.
Owen said the engine caused the explosion, but at the court of inquiry, the chief engineer is saying that the engines were okay.
God, what a damn lie. All the survivors have had orders to stick to one tail. You see, there are questions of pensions and compensation.
I must get to the truth somehow.
It'll do no good. They can all deny. You'd be hounded out if they knew at the Air Ministry.
But I must do something.
The truth will out, and all will come out. In any case, it helps us so much to tell you all that happened.
Scotty, two of the men who survived the crash, engineers Binks and Bell, talk about Hunt shouting at the last minute, "We're down, lads." A thing puzzling the Court of Inquiry is how did he know things were desperate?
Hunt knew an hour before. did what any other man would do. He tried to give the warning to the men's quarters.
Is there no written record where one can read of these defects? Are there no books at Cardington?
Of course there are, but Colmore knows more about that.
Is Colmore there? I need proof that you all knew, that you tried to warn Thompson. I'll sound out Robertson Noble from HQ.
Listen, Villers, don't trust Robertson Noble. I hate to say so, but they know what took place.
They know? How?
Robertson Noble were on board when we had the critical talk with Thompson. They heard every word.
Surely they must speak out.
They would lose their position, and there'd be hell to pay.
Ah, Emily, you made it. Thank you. You're the only one I can talk to. The Ministry are getting very suspicious.
Is that why you couldn't talk on the telephone?
Ridiculous, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
They've warned me that my career is on the line.
The Air Ministry?
No, Scott and Owen.
I looked through your notes.
And?
The trouble clearly started before the change of watch at 2 a.m.
I know.
And yet at the inquiry...
They're saying it all happened after the watch took place. In a mad 8 minutes.
Scott says that Hunt knew an hour before.
I can't believe that the crew would have changed watch given the conditions. The ship was diving all over the place. Gas bags collapsing.
Do you think Judge Simon is going to lay the blame with the crew?
He can't do that. The crew were fighting for their lives. No airship had ever faced such conditions. I managed to speak to Binks and Bell, but they both seem very nervy. They're suspicious of my questions.
I think you have to be more careful.
I know, but the inquiry is not hearing what really happened.
What did happen?
Who's that?
Where?
Over there.
A man walking his dog.
We'll walk back this way. He should not have gone. It's as simple as that.
You blame Lord Thompson?
No. His policy was India at all costs, but I can't believe he would order them to fly if they were telling him otherwise.
Seems incredible.
Well, I know, but that's what Scott, Irwin and Johnson are telling me. It's the same with this business with Robertson Noble. If they knew, if they witnessed this meeting before they flew, then... I know these men. Work with them, trust them.
And don't want them to get into trouble with Whitehall.
Exactly. It's all getting too ugly.
Looking for someone to blame may not be what the men are wanting you to do.
What do you mean?
Well, they talk about the meeting before they left. They talk about the faults in the design, the appalling conditions. But what they want, why they are coming through, is not to lay blame, but to stop any more airships from flying. It's why Hinch came through, to stop these damned airships from flying. Irwin says the same thing. So too, Scott.
I can't stop the entire airship industry, Emily.
I think that's what they want, for you to try.
What if Mrs. Garrett has somehow managed to make all this up? The whole thing? What if we've been completely taken in? Someone's coming.
Major Villers!
I knew they were following me.
Major Villers!
It's you, Mary. My secretary.
You said to find you if there was any message from Cardington.
And?
The whole place has been stripped, sir.
What do you mean?
Roberts and Noble have taken every book, file, document, the whole lot.
Why?
For the inquiry, they said, sir.
Right. But thank you, Mary.
Oh, yes. I found Archie, sir.
How? Where?
On a map.
Which map? I couldn't find it.
No, sir. I found a special OS map, sir, and there it was. Archie, a small railway crossing.
What special OS map?
The ones Wing Commander Johnson ordered for the airships.
Colmore is here.
Dear Colmore, let me know your version of the meeting held on board before she sailed.
I wasn't there.
I must try and establish where certain documents are, as I want Judge Simon to see them for himself.
I've been up to my room at Cardington and everything's been cleared up. Where have all my books gone?
I don't know. That is what I'm trying to find out. Try and explain the various books that you kept there.
Everything was divided up to departmental or sections. All these sections have their own record books.
I want to see all these in court.
It's absolutely necessary for them to be there. Good God, it's awful if these books have been tampered with. What are Robertson Noble doing?
Did you and others at Cardington ever make your feelings known in any other documents?
Yes, of course. We wrote minutes to the Air Ministry protesting about the bad condition of the ship. Copies of all these were in my office.
My God. That means everything has been taken.
Treasury said we couldn't go on spending money like this unless we did something to justify ourselves. So they insisted on this mad flight.
Then I will have to go and see Judge Simon.
Scotty is here. He's damn nervous about you. We all feel that you're taking a terrible risk. If by any chance the Air Ministry have half an inkling of what you're doing, you will be out. Neck and crop.
Judge Simon will see you, Major Villers.
Thank you.
Major Villers.
Thank you for seeing me at such short notice.
Would you care for a spot of lunch?
No, thank you, sir.
You'll excuse me.
Of course.
Glass of wine, perhaps?
No, thank you, sir.
Well, what can I do for you?
What I have to say is of a very sensitive nature, sir.
Indeed. Darby has briefed me in part and is here to take notes.
Oh, I see, sir.
This had better be worth it, Major. It must be if you're willing to forego such a good lunch.
Yes. I have thought the matter over very carefully and consider it my duty to acquaint you with what will appear to be... I've brought transcripts from a seance.
I see.
It's not something I would normally even consider attending.
No, I quite understand.
But circumstances led me to visit Eileen Garrett, and the results are quite extraordinary.
I'm sure they are, Major Villers. Her reputation is considerable.
I was told that you know a good deal about this sort of thing.
Were you?
Well, that you are out for the truth.
You can't expect me to take transcripts from a seance as evidence for my inquiry.
No, sir, of course not.
So why, may I ask, have you come to see me?
During the seance, I asked for specific evidence that might enable you to carry your inquiries further. A lot of technical problems were known about, and there are various books, ledgers, progress reports, personal diaries, and secret documents, most of which have not been presented to the Court of Inquiry.
Have you details, Villers?
The designer kept a diary, a full and detailed progress report.
I've seen it.
Colmore had a series of department books.
Department books? I've not seen them.
They were in his room at Cardington.
Where are they now?
They've been taken away.
By whom?
I assume for your inquiry.
Department books?
There are two sets of books. One small, marked alphabetically, dealing with work done in the shed. And then there are larger books, marked A to F, that held records of the test flights.
And what might these books look like?
Ordinary brown government ledgers with XVTR101 written on them. The smaller books are marked AR101, BR101, CR101, up to L.
And you obtained all this detailed information from the medium?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything else?
The men, Scott, Irwin, Colmore, Johnson, all believe that official files and minutes of crucial design meetings had been doctored and certain damning evidence kept from you.
I need evidence, not rumor. The law is powerless without it.
They spoke to Lord Thompson before the flight. They warned him.
I'm reliably informed that everyone was extremely optimistic.
That was the impression they all gave. As soon as the press and photographers left and everyone was on board, they told Thompson not to fly. He overruled them. No possibility of delay.
If this could be proved, Major Villers, it would have extremely serious repercussions.
I know.
I need proof.
Yes.
As all those who spoke to Thompson are now dead.
Noble and Roberts were there, sir. They heard everything.
That's not what they've been saying to me. Why are you doing this, Major?
This is not easy, believe you me, sir.
You have risked a great deal coming to see me with all this.
I was there. I waved goodbye to them.
You can hardly blame yourself, Major.
Well, like you, sir, I am out for the truth.
A word of warning. Friendly advice. This material of yours would be in much demand, particularly by the press, who would pay a very high price.
Sir John, surely you don't think that I should have come to you in confidence and told you all I have and then given it to the press?
I bring the subject up only as a precaution. Friendly advice, Major Villers. Do you have all that, Darby?
Yes,
sir. I am grateful to you for coming to see me, Major. When this information you have offered has been followed up, we will have it compiled into a dossier which you'll be asked to sign.
Yes, sir.
Merely a formality. No need to worry.
No, sir. Thank you for seeing me, sir.
Let's hope, Major Villers, you've not risked your name for nothing. Good day to you.
Judge Simon made inquiries about the ledgers and books. He was told that they did not exist. His later questioning of Robertson Noble was much sterner than I'd seen it before, and I do believe he had taken everything I told him seriously. So seriously, in fact, that Eileen Garrett suffered the indignity of being cross-examined by military police, who assumed that to get her information she must have had informal relations with the entire crew of the R-101. In the end, the inquiry failed to examine all the facts. The government and Air Ministry got what they wanted. A whitewash. After the crash, Hinchliffe guided the airmen through to Eileen Garrett so that the truth would be known. At the time, both Emily and I thought his ambition of closing the British airship industry an impossible one to achieve. But the R-101 sister ship, the R-100, never flew again, and the government totally abandoned the airship program. Hinch, it would seem, finally got his wish. I was warned at the time by both the airman and Judge Simon never to tell anyone about the sessions with Eileen Garrett. My dear friends, Scott, Irwin, Johnson, and Colmore, told me not to worry. It helps us so much, they said, to tell you all that has happened. Well, I have, at last, told my story. But it's not the whole story. There are still, to this day, papers and files, documents and department books locked away, held in secret. Perhaps one day the whole story will be told, and the airmen will get their final wish. The truth will come out. All of it will come out.
In The Airmen Who Would Not Die, Major Villers was played by Jack Davenport, Captain Hinchliffe by David Tennant, Major Scott, Jason Watkins, Wing Commander Colmore, Anthony Carr, and Dermot Crowley was Flight Lieutenant Irwin. Squadron Leader Johnson was played by Kevin Wakely, Elsie Mackay by Geraldine Alexander, Gordon Sinclair, Douglas Hodge, Rosa Crompton was Little Joan, and Rhoda Lewis, Mrs. Earle. Emily Hinchliffe was played by Sylvester Letuzel, Lord Thompson and Sir John Simon by David Bradley, and Miranda Richardson was Eileen Garrett. The music was composed and performed by Peter Haywood. The Airman Who Would Not Die was by Michael Crompton, adapted from the book by John G. Fuller. The play was directed by Catherine Bailey and John Dove, and is a Catherine Bailey Limited production for BBC Radio 4.